It's time for Forward Nation Radio. Now here he is, the host of Forward Nation Radio, David Leventhal.
Welcome to Forward Nation Radio. I'm David Leventhal. On today's show, the Supreme Court prepares to do more mischief. The GOP rediscovers its concern for budget deficits. The criminal-in-chief defends us from COVID. And a follow-up on our discussions of freedom and extremism. But first, the Department of Justice drops its case against criminal Michael Flynn, Donald Trump's first national security advisor. Well, that's a little misleading because it didn't really drop its case as much as it, say, threw in a hand it had already won, since he had already pled guilty twice. Kind of like New England forfeiting the Super Bowl after the game had already ended. It's not really a case we learned in part because in a somewhat remarkable, almost unprecedented move, the judge in that case has responded to the Department of Justice seeking to drop charges against a man who has already twice admitted to his guilt. The judge has responded by appointing a former prosecutor, a former judge, to oppose the Department of Justice's efforts to drop its own criminal case. Staggering. And I'm sure on Fox News and all the right-wing media, they're talking right now about crazy judges and why they need to continue to fill our judiciary with safe crap that they've been doing. But of course, what's really staggering is how unprecedented what the Department of Justice did was. How totally against the rule of law and any sense of justice in this country. And fighting back against that is the judge, taking the advice of most criminal, long-time criminal prosecutors, people involved in the system, who've said you need to push back against this blatantly illegal activity, or blatantly pro-criminal activity anyway. Let's recall what the former National Security Advisor Michael Flynn has pled guilty to, just so we're all clear on this. He lied to the vice president. Doesn't seem that big a deal. Okay, he was underneath the vice president, but whatever, lied to his boss. He also lied to the FBI, United States Investigatory Agencies. What did he lie about? His contacts with Russian Ambassador Sergei Kislyak around the time leading up to the election and following the election. He lied about his contacts with a representative of a hostile foreign power regarding efforts, perhaps, to get them to put their thumb on the scale, hard to imagine this could ever happen, to get Donald Trump to be elected president of the United States. He lied specifically about whether they had talked about anything substantive, like, for instance, the sanctions that Obama had imposed on Russia. Flynn had said that he did not. He did. This was before, okay, undermining the United States to enlist the aid of a hostile foreign power to steal an election had Senate approval in this country. I mean, now it's okay. We've learned from the impeachment trial. You can go ahead and undermine U.S. elections enlisting the aid of hostile foreign powers, but this was before it was okay to do it. Of course, even if people are arguing that he didn't actually seek to undermine the U.S. election and help that, good luck. It's freaking obvious that that's exactly what was going on. But even if he didn't do that, if this was not about using a hostile foreign power to fix a U.S. election, even if it wasn't that, which it was, it subjected the National Security Advisor of the United States of America to blackmail. The National Security Advisor of the United States put himself into a position, unquestionably, undeniably, where he could be blackmailed by a hostile foreign power, even if he wasn't in cahoots with them, because Russia knew that he lied to the FBI and to the vice president. Russia knew this. And this is something that even security officials were expressing at the time was a major concern, that your national security advisor would be someone who was so likely to be subject to blackmail. It was so awful at the time, the vice president said firing him was the right idea. Imagine that, being subject to blackmail from a hostile foreign power and lying to your boss. Wow, a bold stand by the vice president saying that firing his guy was a good idea. Or, as Mike Pence now puts it, the vice president of the United States, gosh, I would be happy to welcome him back to the White House. Oh, wait, what? Yeah, what happened in the meantime? What intervened to make it okay for this man subject to blackmail who lied to his boss? Could you imagine this happening in normal circles? Don't try this at home, kids. Do not go lie to your boss and expect to have your boss say, come on back, we love to have you. In this case, that's right. Now, I suppose I'll give them a pass a little bit, because the whole idea of being blackmailed, now it's all out in the open, I suppose, that he's a liar and probably worked with the Russians. So there's really not much to blackmail him on, since there is no justice anymore in this country. And nobody paying any attention to anything other than Fox News believes that the people running this country have the country's best interests at heart. So I guess Pence's thoughts are, well, it really doesn't matter. Well, you know, he lied to his bosses. He lied to the FBI. Donald Trump, when this first happened, said, when he was forced to, basically, yeah, he lied to Pence. He lied to the FBI. I have to fire him. Well, so what does Donald Trump think about it now? Well, we learned that Donald Trump was going to pardon him. No surprise there. We've talked about this on the show in the past. Donald Trump was all prepared to pardon this criminal and potential criminal. But it turns out his attorney general, the bitch, decided to beat him to it. Aw, it's nice to ingratiate yourself with your boss, not by lying, but by breaking United States law and flushing it down the drain in order to make your boss appreciate you better. In other words, Attorney General William Barr. He decided to beat him to it by dismissing the charges against Michael Flynn. So in this case, Attorney General Barr was asked about this pathetic maneuver, un-American criminal maneuver. And Barr decided to act cute, coy about the whole thing. Did you see the interview where he says, how do you think history, he's asked, how do you think history is going to treat this thing? It depends who writes history. Unfortunately, that statement says a lot more than just absolute disdain for this country and the rule of law. Absolute disdain for the merits of what he actually did. It in fact reflects an understanding that they will indeed be writing history by lying entirely about everything. And an expectation that Fox News, One America News, and the usual right-wing shit will just cover up all of the criminal behavior of this administration. Yes, it is once again a recognition that the Attorney General of the United States is counting on the fact that this country is Nazi Germany. So, speaking of writing history, the Trump and the Trump administration immediately got about rewriting history and creating the lies that they want this country to remember about our complete abdication of U.S. law and U.S. responsibility. And by that, I mean Obamagate. Yes, I'm sure you've all heard at this point that Donald Trump, the president of the United States, the leader of the free world, has been going out trashing his predecessor, finding way more time to do that than, for instance, to make any effort to protect Americans from a global deadly pandemic. He's going out bashing his predecessor for Obamagate. The fun part is that at least in the beginning when he started doing this, he thought it was a good political strategy. Somebody maybe helped put him up to it. Let's just turn this into an indictment of Obama. He didn't even know what the hell it was about. When asked what Obamagate was, he had no response. You know what it is. You know it's bad. You know what it is. I don't have to talk about it. It's really bad. He didn't know what it was. Whatever. I'll make some shit up later on was the point. Well, he's probably since gotten on board a little bit, and he's going to have some help there. Lindsey Graham, his bitch in the Senate, has already made it clear that we will have a Senate investigation of Obamagate, whatever the hell that happens to be. Whatever we can make up, that you can expect, you can be sure that the United States Senate will spend its time investigating the former president for stupid bullshit that the president made up. What is that stupid bullshit? That stupid bullshit is that this was all a politically motivated attack on Donald Trump and to prevent Donald Trump from being elected. All of the evidence, including the report from the United States Senate, the Republicans, said that none of that was true. That doesn't matter. Because it's, you know, it really depends on who's going to be writing the history of what is true and what doesn't, what isn't true. And right now, Lindsey Graham is going to help Donald Trump make sure that he writes a false narrative. So the United States Senate will be investigating. What's next on Lindsey Graham's agenda? Will the United States Senate next be investigating the fact that Stormy Daniels didn't swallow? I guess that's coming up next. Whatever the hell it is that the commander, the dictator-in-chief wants. This is what the United States Senate is. Am I exaggerating the impact here? You need to be really scared about this. This is, again, a descent into Nazi totalitarianism. It is further emboldening the criminal organization that doesn't need further emboldening. The Republican Party, the Republican criminal organization, and its ilk. It is further emboldening them to completely ignore the rule of law and any concept of democracy in this country. Yes, it is a huge further step into the path of totalitarianism. Gee, you wonder why the judge might have thought to appoint someone to look to see whether maybe this isn't a good idea. This is beyond childish to be doing this and to be raising these issues, but you know, I would have to apologize to children for bringing this up. But, you know, Trump can go around and rail against his predecessor for Obamagate and being the biggest criminal this country has ever seen in the White House. He can go because he has nothing else to worry about at this point. There's obviously nothing going on in this country right now that should be occupying the president's time or anything. Whoa, you know what that sound means. Actually, you, of course, have no idea what that sound means. So I will tell you. That sound of the flushing toilet means it's time to talk about the United States Supreme Court. And gosh, that joke just works in so many ways. Anyway, the United States Supreme Court right now is considering, after oral argument this past week, whether the president of the United States is wholly and completely above the law, as Donald Trump has asked it to rule. Yes, Donald Trump's lawyer, lead lawyer, the born-again Christian, Jay Sekulow, has argued in front of the United States Supreme Court in cases involving efforts to get Donald Trump's tax returns and financial information. He has argued that the president is above the law. So we've gone beyond just President of the United States can shoot somebody on Fifth Avenue and not lose anything politically. He will not even be subject to any investigation or criminal action for taking out a gun and murdering someone he doesn't like. That was the argument of the White House attorney. So let's talk about what the Supreme Court is determining here. There are two cases. One is that the district attorney in New York, Cy Vance Jr., has subpoenaed, not from the president of the United States, by the way, from banks and independent organizations from the IRS, Donald Trump's tax returns as part of ongoing criminal investigations. Also, Congress has been trying to get financial records from the President of the United States. Again, not really from the President of the United States, from other entities that already have those documents. That distinction is important because the question of whether this will unduly interfere with the actions of the President of the United States become more ridiculous than they were even in the past when this has come up, because they don't even involve the President of the United States. They just involve other entities providing information that they already have, that's already been compiled regarding the President of the United States. So the Supreme Court will be determining whether these things are obtainable by law enforcement authorities, or whether, in effect, the president is completely above the law. Well, there's some pretty clear precedent on this. There is some pretty clear precedent regarding Presidents Bill Clinton and Richard Nixon, where the United States Supreme Court has, I believe in both cases, unanimously said that the President of the United States is not above the law, does not have the right to just shield all of his documents from the public. Again, in both of those cases, it actually required the president to do stuff. So those were tougher calls than this one. There's a little bit of a difference here. The Supreme Court, in oral argument, seemed to be drawing a distinction between prosecutors, state prosecutors asking for this information in the case of the New York District Attorney, and Congress asking for this information, which could be seen as overly political. Again, it really wasn't during Nixon and Clinton, but this is a distinction that the Supreme Court may try to make. Now, commentators on this are pointing out that the United States Supreme Court, with these two obvious precedents that were closer calls than this one, overwhelming precedents, the United States Supreme Court, even as corrupt as it is, can't just rule in favor of Donald Trump here. Personally, I've been arguing since we started this show and long before that we give way too much credit to this current Supreme Court and their sense of any kind of decency or honor or respect for the institution that they're involved in. There is hope that John Roberts, the Chief Justice, will have enough concern over his legacy, leaving a Supreme Court that is seen rightly as nothing other than an extension of our political parties, that maybe he will look for some kind of a way out here, where they don't just say, Donald Trump could do whatever the hell he wants and nobody else can look into him. Now, people say, well, they're not going to do that in part because now they create a precedent that when there's a Democratic president, and once again I say, wow, are you giving the Supreme Court too much credit? The idea that they will not basically come out and figure out a way to say that Republican presidents have complete immunity from any kind of investigation, but Democratic presidents, it's different, I think is deluding themselves. But maybe they won't go quite that far. Maybe Roberts will convince some of his conservative justices that now is not the time to completely delegitimize the United States Supreme Court, especially in advance of an election where hopefully the Democrats will take back the presidency and hopefully the Senate. My words to God's ears, so to speak. So what will the United States Supreme Court do? Will it issue a ruling that will provide us with this financial information and maybe provide the public with information it needs about how much of a criminal and how much of a selfish scumbag the President of the United States is before an election? No, I don't think there's any chance that the United States Supreme Court is going to do that. The hope among legal commentators is that the United States Supreme Court will use some kind of middle ground to basically cover this up and stall until after the election. So the obvious answer that people are proposing, despite the powerful precedents in favor of just turn the damn information over, is that the United States will figure out a way to say, tisk, tisk, this is really terrible. This is bad. The president should not be seen as above the law. And we're going to send it back down to the lower courts with the understanding, lower courts, by the way, all having ruled against Trump on this, unanimously having ruled against Trump, every lower court that has heard this before the United States Supreme Court. they will send it back to the lower courts with some pretense, some excuse, some, gee, this isn't ripe for the United States Supreme Court to tell them to turn over this information just yet, so that they could stall until after the election, at the very least. And then, of course, if Donald Trump is reelected, all bets are off, because at that point, this country will be a totalitarian state. We will have moved away from any pretense of democracy. And the United States Supreme Court will be free to just say, whatever Donald Trump wants, Donald Trump gets. As Justice Kavanaugh, Donald Trump's most recent appointee, put it in oral argument, judges need to, the judiciary has long used the avoid chaos principle of judging. Or as he describes it, if it's a close call or a tiebreaker, we should not facilitate or create chaos, such as the chaos that would be created by having a president above the law and preventing any criminal investigations of illegal activity. Oh, I'm sorry. Those were actually quotes from Justice Kavanaugh, but they were not actually quotes in this case. They weren't quotes about a criminal presidency and this country's descent into totalitarianism. Oh, no. That was Justice Kavanaugh opining on the Electoral College. Yes, because this week the Supreme Court also heard argument in other cases about the Electoral College. Basically, whether states could require electors to vote as they are told, to vote as they were put into office. Now, I want to explain this a little bit. The Constitution instituted this pathetic idea of an electoral college for two reasons. As you know, I'll back up a little bit in case you're not a regular listener and haven't heard our discussions of electoral college in the past. As you all should know right now, the American public doesn't determine who wins elections. We know that because we keep getting Republican presidents who lose the election, like the current one. In fact, the American public votes for electors or the Electoral College, and the way that's done is very undemocratic, which is why the Electoral College that's elected gets to go in and put in a president who lost the popular vote. Well, there are two reasons the Constitution has an Electoral College. One is to support the interests of slave owners and slave-owning states. Yes! You can see why that one is of continuing relevancy. The second reason that the Electoral College was put into the Constitution was that our founders felt that the American public was too stupid to be trusted to vote. That the American public could do something so unbelievably stupid that we needed a buffer between them and their dangerous mistakes, you know, like electing Donald Trump as president of the United States. So much for that one. But here's the thing. The Electoral College doesn't do that anymore. It doesn't do that. They generally vote the way they're told, though there are often a couple of radicals who make a protest vote in the Electoral College. No deserting elector has affected a U.S. election ever. But now what the Supreme Court is weighing in on is whether that second rationale under the Constitution for the Electoral College is completely bullshit, is now a complete thing of the past. In other words, if and when the United States Supreme Court rules that electors are required to vote for the person they were elected to vote for, the only reason we will have an Electoral College is to promote the interests of slave owners and slave-owning states. Think we should get rid of the Electoral College, anybody? When and if Joe Biden becomes the president, if this country survives, one of the first things on his agenda needs to be to get rid of the Electoral College. I have talked in the past about how that could be done without a constitutional amendment. Whatever, it needs to be done. And if pressure needs to be put on the states, how about maybe blue states like New York and California will stop subsidizing red state sons of bitches unless they vote to get rid of the Electoral College. Anyway, the Colorado Attorney General, speaking in favor of the United States Supreme Court tying the hands of electors, argued that the lower court ruling that said electors could vote for whoever they want. They're just, the Constitution says that they get elected to be electors. It doesn't direct them how to vote. He pointed out that that ruling could, quote, occasion a constitutional crisis. I find that ironic that actually doing what the Constitution wanted you to do is now what's deemed a constitutional crisis. Obviously, the real constitutional crisis here is the fact that we have an electoral college in the first place. But don't worry through all this, United States Supreme Court dropping criminal cases against criminals as long as they work for the President of the United States. Don't worry about our descent into totalitarianism, everybody. Fox News tells us everything will be okay, so there's nothing to worry about. Okay, this is a real bummer so far. So let's try to brighten things up a little bit. Let's go to the good news department. We so rarely have good news, and I want to focus on a little bit of good news now. Turns out the Republican Party has rediscovered United States budget deficits. Yes, the GOP has rediscovered the budget deficits that always motivate them whenever there's a Democratic president. So why is this good news? Well, it must mean if they've rediscovered budget deficits, it must mean that there's a Democratic president coming, because that's the only time that Republicans ever consider budget deficits, because otherwise it would interfere with their efforts to give more billions of dollars to billionaires, which is, of course, their entire reason for being. How did the GOP discover? Okay, sorry. I guess I sold that under false pretenses. This is not good news that the GOP is rediscovering deficits. Maybe it shows some concern about the upcoming presidential election, but it's more than that. It is simply a reflection of the fact that the Republican Party is currently losing a very important policy debate in this country. The idea that this country, in the midst of this global pandemic that has shut down the economy of 50 states in America, that we need to help people who are suffering. Imagine that. The idea that we need to actually give money to people who've lost their jobs, who've lost their livelihood, can't pay their rent, etc. This is something that is becoming obvious to everybody, right? And by everybody, not just watching Fox News, of course. Trump's handpicked Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell came out this week and strongly warned of permanent damage to the U.S. economy if we do not provide a sufficient financial stimulus, financial support for people who need financial support in this country. This is Trump's handpicked chair of the Federal Reserve says we need to come out and help these people. We need to provide financial support to, oh my God, poor and suffering people in this country, not just rich people. Uh-oh, it looks like it's time for the President of the United States to start scouring Fox News for his replacement. But aside from that, until Donald Trump replaces him, we are having a debate in this country about actually helping human beings, something that is anathema to the Republican Party. And for that reason, even though they're in power, in this case, they're not really in power, and the Republican Party has all of a sudden discovered, oh, you know, we've got a budget deficit, it turns out. Yeah, big budget deficit. We'd love to help all those starving children. Gosh darn it, we just can't afford it. Maybe, of course, we could roll back the $2 trillion tax cut mostly for billionaires, hedge fund manager scumbags, real estate tycoons, the wealthiest people in this country, who are averaging about $1.7 million in tax cut from the Republican tax cut of 2017. Maybe we could start talking about going back on that and maybe even raising taxes on billionaires a little bit. Uh-oh, looks like bad news in America. So that brings us to COVID, of course. Speaking of bad news in America, latest numbers, Latest official numbers, 1.5 million infected in the United States, about 90,000 deaths. Again, those numbers drastically undercount the actual toll. Other estimates right now are coming out showing the death toll in the United States alone closer to 120,000 or so. Or, as some people are pointing out, to put these numbers in some kind of context, 40 9-11s already. Or more people, more Americans than have died in any wars America has fought since, I think, World War II. Lots of deaths. Worldwide deaths approaching 300,000. But don't worry, everybody, because the leader of the free world is on the case protecting us. Yes, what's the latest catastrophe regarding the jackass in chief? The man who has no concern whatsoever for another human being, is not capable of the concept of empathy like most of his supporters? Donald Trump toured a mask factory without a mask this week. As undoubtedly you've already heard, he toured a mask factory without wearing a mask. Because, what the hell? Even though his own administration is sending out guidelines that say people should wear masks, he's making it clear that we should be ignoring his own administration. Well, at least in one respect, he might be right. It is comical, if it wasn't so tragic, that Donald Trump, without a mask, tours a mask factory, while Live and Let Die is being played on the soundtrack. Live and Let Die. You can't make this stuff up. Of course, it's even worse than that. It wasn't even the original Live and Let Die. It's Donald Trump. It was the fucking cover. It was a fucking cover of The Wings' Live and Let Die. While this was going on, Senate bitch Lindsey Graham weighed in on the whole issue of helping people in need by saying that enhanced unemployment benefits extension would be done over his dead body. Again, a remarkably empathetic phrase to use in the middle of a deadly global pandemic. Over his dead body. Maybe from the White House and the Republican Senate, we can at least start with stopping the dead people references for a little while. I don't know. I guess it just proves their virility, because if there's one thing you think of when you see Donald Trump and Lindsey Graham, well, if it's not bone spurs, you think virility. Those are real manly men there, which of course is what the Republican Party is all about appealing to right now. But of course, Donald Trump doesn't need to wear a mask because it's not like anybody around him can have the coronavirus. As we've heard, I guess we're going back to the good news department here, Donald Trump's valet has tested positive for the coronavirus. Also, Katie Miller, Vice President Pence's press secretary. Oh, by the way, did I leave out that Vice President Pence, the week before, had been touring a hospital without the face mask that's required? Again, no concern there, they responded. We don't have it, no problem. Well, it turns out not only does Donald Trump's valet, but Katie Miller, Pence's press secretary, has it. Katie Miller's husband is Stephen Miller, the director of the Department of Racism right now in the United States government. That absolute piece of human trash, who the only good news here could be, could Katie Miller have brought this home and could Stephen Miller die? Could she have brought it to the vice president and could he die? Could Trump's valet have brought it to President Trump and could he go ahead and die? No, because that would mean that there was some justice in the world. And have you not been listening? That's not the way things tend to work in this country. So, the good news when you hear this, more good news, Trump, people around Trump and Pence have this. You start thinking about presidential succession. You start thinking about what would happen if how amazing would it be, and I'm not rooting for anybody's death. Oh, wait, I'm sorry, I am rooting for their death. Never mind. If the president and the vice president were to die of this virus and justice were to prevail, that Nancy Pelosi, the Speaker of the House, would become the president of the United States. This was giving me such joy, just the thought of this. The stick, not only the fact that we'd have a Democratic president and a competent president to help us get through this, but the stick in the eye of Fox News viewers. Well, that hope was dashed. It turns out I got this all wrong. This week, Attorney General Barr just put out a memo summarizing the Presidential Succession Act, and it turns out that if the president and the vice president die, William Barr becomes the president of the United States. I did not know that, and I always thought it was different, but he's got a memo that says, no, this is what the Presidential Succession Act says. I would become the president. So I guess that would be the way it works. Anyway, so the director of the CDC, the commissioner of the FDA, the director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, the number one epidemiologist in this country, Dr. Anthony Fauci, have all gone into self-quarantine because of this. Meanwhile, the president and vice president show up to other people in other places without wearing masks. So the White House, it turns out, had ordered everyone but Trump and Pence to wear a mask. Not looking good in the pictures, the campaign ads, not good for virility. So the White House has understood the concept that people should be wearing masks, but we won't apply it to Trump and Pence. Because after all, people around them are tested all the time. We're protecting them. The fact that they could potentially spread it to others, well, as they say, you know, they don't have it. To the extent that somehow they do get it and they spread it to others, who gives a shit? Because this is America. And being a selfish piece of shit is now perfectly okay, especially if you're the president and the vice president of the United States. We've been learning this for a long time. The news coming out now that our efforts to actually address the pandemic, our efforts to come up with vaccines, our efforts to make masks and provide protection equipment have all been hampered by the fact that in order to get government contracts, you first need to offer payoffs to Jared Kushner and the President of the United States. That if you want to protect the American public, you're going to have to take a huge role in making Donald Trump's reelection a reality. And, of course, putting more money into their pockets. This is America right now, a criminal organization, all at the top. So meanwhile, speaking of American safety, all across America, GOP states are opening back up as I speak. Over 30 states have planned and are in the midst of opening back up. Even, remember, as the White House's own figures conceded that this would result in many thousands of additional deaths. Uh-oh, looks like we're going to have to add a whole bunch to the column of in favor of Donald Trump in the who killed more Americans than anyone else in history sweepstakes. The White House concedes that it will result in the death of thousands and thousands and thousands. Anthony Fauci, as I discussed, and Robert Redfield, the head of the CDC, testified this week to the deadly risk, testified to the Senate. They wouldn't let him testify in front of the House because that's Democrat. Testified to the Senate about the deadly risk and that we are not ready to open. But what the hell? That's just experts. Who cares what experts think? Certainly not Rand Paul, who felt no problem lecturing Dr. Fauci. Because Rand Paul, after all, is a doctor as well. A stupid piece of shit, but a doctor. So why should he listen to Anthony Fauci talk about thousands and thousands of Americans dying? After all, we've got an election that Donald Trump needs to steal at stake. The Wisconsin Supreme Court, in fact, overturned the Wisconsin Democratic governor's order to maintain social isolation to combat this deadly pandemic. In doing so, the Republican Wisconsin Supreme Court, in a closely divided opinion, sided with the Republican legislature in putting Donald Trump's reelection way ahead of saving the lives of people in Wisconsin. Interestingly, the Supreme Court, the Wisconsin Supreme Court opinions on the subject actually used the language of the ultra-right, of Fox News, of Donald Trump, tyranny. This is tyranny. Our government trying to save the lives of its citizens, otherwise known as tyranny. Tyranny, by the way, the governor is in a dispute, which he has now lost, with the legislature of Wisconsin and the Supreme Court of Wisconsin. Does anybody want to guess which of those three was actually elected by the people of Wisconsin? I'll give you a second or two to think about that. Or you actually, you could just put this on pause. Which of those three was elected? The governor was. The legislature was not. Wisconsin is so gerrymandered that the people continue to vote against Republicans, but Republicans still own the legislature. We've talked about that at length. And of course, they've stolen all these elections, which is why the Republican Supreme Court is conservative, or the Wisconsin Supreme Court is Republican, even though the people voted for a Democratic voter. The people vote for Democrats. So tyranny, it is the tyranny of democracy, of actually the people's choice winning. Sounds kind of like the opposite of tyranny to me. By the way, tyranny, you know what sounds like tyranny to me? Tyranny to me? When you show up with your AR-15 semi-automatic assault weapons to open up a fucking tattoo parlor against government orders and against the health interests of your fellow citizens, as they are doing in Texas, fortunately in small numbers at this point, but it's bound to grow. And even though they're small numbers, these stupid sons of fucking bitches, this is the Republican Party. They may be a small number of people, but they are running the Republican Party. In addition to, of course, the rich sons of bitches right now. Showing up with semi-automatic assault rifles to prevent the enforcement of laws designed to promote public health. Or, as the GOP would put it, fighting against tyranny, I guess. This is insanity. Or as the New York Times described it, it's creating a dilemma for authorities. Creating a dilemma? Armed insurrectionists is creating a dilemma? Would we have this dilemma if these people were black? I'll give you a second to think about that one. If black people, for instance, if members of the Black Panthers showed up armed, members of the Occupy Wall Street movement or the Black Lives Matter movement showed up at polling places to make sure black people got to vote, do you think that would be a dilemma for local authorities? No, it would be a chance to use their guns and kill all these people. I'm not saying these fucking morons, these pieces of shit at these tattoo parlors and other places with their semi-automatics should be murdered, should be killed by state authorities. I think they should be arrested. And if they choose to resist arrest, then they should be killed. Because that's kind of the law. Just a reminder that the Civil War is getting closer and closer and closer in this country. Before we leave, I talked last time about how freedom is the most misused word in the English language. That when someone starts talking to you about freedom, or I will add to that tyranny and loyalty, turn around and run because they have their eyes on your wallet. We're seeing more about this pro-freedom movement from people with guns. And there was a great article from Dahlia Lithwick in Slate this week that I think kind of sums things up pretty well. And I want to read a paragraph from that article. I think I listened to her podcast, the Amicus Brief, if you're interested in the law, it's another recommendation. Lawsuits demanding that stay-at-home orders be repealed have been filed this week in Maryland, Minnesota, and Nevada. In Michigan, a Family Dollar store security guard was shot after telling a customer to wear a face mask, which is mandated throughout the state for all retail stores. in Oklahoma, McDonald's employees were shot at for asking customers to leave the dining area, which was closed due to coronavirus restrictions. Small but media gobbling gatherings of armed protesters continue to gather, demanding that state stay-at-home orders be rescinded, using lethal weaponry to demonstrate a power their numbers cannot convey. Members of the state Supreme Court in Wisconsin, hearing arguments in a case challenging the governor's stay-at-home rules, safer-at-home rules, invoked the language of tyranny and the Japanese internment to describe the current public health efforts to contain a pandemic. President Donald Trump has tweeted support for the armed militants. "These are very good people. They are angry. They want their lives back again, safely." And demanded the liberation of the states. Defiant public intellectuals embrace the general democratic principle that being a grandma killer is a small price to pay for resuming dentist visits and family trips to the zoo. I couldn't and haven't said it better myself, so thanks to Dahlia Lithwick for summing it up. In this country, we have always had a debate about what freedom means. And a debate has often taken the form of freedom to versus freedom from. Freedom to do whatever the hell you want versus freedom from people impinging upon your liberties by doing whatever the hell they want. The former is exploitation. I have the freedom to pollute all I want. I have the freedom to carry my gun around and scare the shit out of you if I want, point it at you if I want. I have my freedom to drive however I want on the road. That's exploitation of others. Damaging, harming, ruining the lives of other people. People who are undoubtedly much better than you are. That's what freedom has always been propounded, or at least in your lifetime, has always been propounded by the current Republican criminal organization. Freedom to exploit, freedom to harm, freedom to destroy. What's promoted by liberals, even socialists, nasty word, is freedom from. The idea that I should be free from the threat that you pose to me by walking around waving your gun in my face. I should be free from the fear that that instills. I should be free from your pollution, free from the shit you dump in my water, free from your efforts to exploit me. Be clear that when Republicans talk about freedom and liberty, what they are really talking about is exploitation. But somehow that word doesn't have quite the same ring, does it? Anywho, that's today's show. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back soon with more of our discussions of what we should be learning from this coronavirus. Until then, be well, be safe, and be careful.
You've been listening to Forward Nation Radio with David Leventhal.